Radio Ghana.
Live from our national studios here in Accra and linking up with all our regional FM stations, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program examining issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. I am Kingsley Obinchiret. For tonight, Majority Caucus in Parliament from the Western Region persuades their minority counterparts from the region to support approval of the $3 billion Chinese loan facility. What is the minority's reaction? And managing the urban challenge effectively, the case of the Accra Metropolitan Assembly, where should planning be in the jigsaw? Many more issues on these ones together with waste management and other concerns in urban sprawls. Behind the News, linking up with all our regional FM stations, you are live on Radio BAR in Sunyang and also on Sunrise FM, Koforidua. As usual, we encourage you to be very active listeners by sharing your comments and concerns with us on 027-272-1404. And we are moving on to our first story. As members of parliament still hold on to the debate and approval of the $3 billion Chinese loan facility to ensure due diligence, the majority caucus from the Western region has appealed to their minority counterparts from the region to support the loan. According to the majority caucus from the region, the Western region stands to gain from the Chinese loan facility. There are many development projects in the region that the loan will support. The Western Regional Minority Caucus in Parliament holds a different opinion and has been reluctant to support their colleagues in the majority. Honorable Harold Kobina is the NDC MP for Seshi Akontombra, and we now have him on the line to see exactly their point in calling for support. You are welcome, sir.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good evening.
You are talking about the Chinese loan facility being to the advantage of the people in the Western region. How is this so?
Yes, it is so. Because the country assessment of the $3 billion loan reveals that the Western region alone stands to benefit over $1.8 billion. This is going to be used for projects such as the Western Corridor Gas Infrastructure Project, Western Corridor Petroleum Terminal Project, Western Corridor Oil Enclave Toll Road Project, Western Corridor Railway Line Modernization Project, Takoradi, Kumasi, Dunkwa, Awasu Railway Line, Western Corridor Infrastructure Renewal Project, Takra Depot, Secondary Free Zone Project, Shared Infrastructure and Utility Services, Land Site in Azim Discov and other areas. These are very, very important projects. If you go to roads, similar roads are being tackled around the wire enclosed area. So if you look at it, the whole sum of $1.8 billion out of $3 billion is coming to the Western region for infrastructure. Yes. So with this, I believe we stand to gain a lot.
Yes.
Even though the projects will be of national character, and the people will benefit immensely.
You are appealing to your counterparts coming from the region. Does that mean that they are also not looking at perhaps the benefits you are talking about?
Well, we made the appeal because it was a statement that we made from the MPP, NDC caucus in Parliament. Once they were not part of us, we decided to bring them on board. That's why we appealed to them.
And we're just asking, they were not part of you, but have you seen anything that indicates that perhaps they wouldn't like to push the bill? And if so, why?
Yeah, if unless tomorrow when we start the debate, that we'll get to know their stance on the issue.
So you just,
at this time, I cannot predict that they are not going to support it.
Yeah. So have you had any response from them?
No.
What does that mean for you? Because you are still looking at the debate, but at least for now, you should have known a little bit as to what they think about it.
Yeah, you see, Parliament is made up of committees, and a lot of members of the Western region are part of the committees that went to deliberate over the proposals. So most of them were part of it. So right now, unless the debate begins, the outcome of the debate will determine how they are going to support the bill.
Okay, so they are waiting for the debate before they tell precisely what they stand for.
Yes.
Okay, please hold on quickly. We'll come back to you, but we have joining us on the lines with the MPP MP for Amenzi East in the Western region, Joseph Wayne Edu. You are welcome, sir. Hello, Mr. Wayne Edu.
Yes, thank you. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you very well. Thank you for joining us too. Yes. What do you make of the call by the majority caucus from your region to support the Chinese loan?
Well, you see, you asked the Member of Parliament for a contrary, a very pertinent question, whether they were entertaining, you know, any fears from the minority members from the Western region. And he has clearly indicated that there wasn't anything like that, meaning that the appeal is just a wolf cry. It's a wolf cry. It's an appeal that was unfounded. They should have even, you know, gone in the first place, because there is nothing at stake as at now to indicate that the minority members from the Western region hold a contrary view or hold, you know, anything different from what they are talking about. So to some of us, you know, we were surprised that this morning they heard this press conference. Let me indicate that in the first place, the press conference itself was premature. Premature because the report on this particular and important loan had not been laid before Parliament at the time they were holding the press conference. So we even weren't privy to what was, you know, in store for us in this particular report. And therefore, whatever decision they are taking was superficial, extremely superficial. And let me also clearly indicate that no member of Parliament on the minority side from the Western region is against this particular loan or any loan being contracted by the government purposely, you know, for the development of the Western region. No member, no member, and let me repeat, no member is against that. If the facility comes and there is no problem with the facility, with the agreement, we are going to wholeheartedly support it. You know, I'll be the first person, you know, to rise up and then support such a facility.
So let me come in, sir. You are looking at the bigger picture of the loan facility and not just what is coming to the Western region.
Yes, that is what I'm talking about. Well, of course, if you even look at the bigger picture of the loan facility, the $3 billion, as much as $1.8 billion, that's more than 50% will be coming to the Western region. That is quite substantial. And it is from that angle that I'm talking about, that we you know, are very receptive. We welcome this idea of government looking for finances to fund projects in the Western region, because we know the situation of the Western region has been there for ages. So any government that comes and is prepared to solve these problems, we must give the government support, provided there are no problems. Because there are examples that I can give. Look at the STX. It's a hoax now. And then just before we rose, you know, that is at our last sitting in May, June, they bought another facility from, that is the same Chinese, $1.8 billion. That is for the Eastern Corridor development, you know, project. And included in this Eastern Corridor development facility of $1.8 billion was a road reconstruction in the Western Corridor. But ask my honorable, you know, member, friend, what has happened to that $1.8 billion this thing which they brought before Parliament? It's also a hoax. This is what we are talking about.
Yeah. So, you believe
see that the one we are going to look at tomorrow will not also be a hoax?
It means
it's a hoax. The Eastern Corridor facility has become a hoax. So what is the guarantee that this $3 billion is not going to be another fiasco?
So, Mr. Boyinedu, from what you are saying, you have given a conditionality provided there are no problems. So you envisage a problem of some sort with this one too.
Exactly. Exactly.
What is that problem?
My brother, you see, we are constitutionally bound to make sure as members of Parliament to ensure, that is, we are to ensure that whatever loan facilities, either agreements we are approving, you know, are done conscientiously, and then we also make sure that, you know, in future there will be no problem, because some of these facilities will be paid maybe 50 years when I'm gone, maybe you are also gone. It's going to be the next generation, our children and then our grandchildren, children who are going to pay. So if you are taking any decision, we must make sure that the proper decisions are taken. And that is where our concern is. You don't just, you know, mind you, $3 billion is not a small money. $3 billion to be paid over a number of years, you know, spanning up to 50 years. We have to take the right decisions for our future generation.
Mr. Boyinedu, please hold on quickly as I go back to your colleague. Mr. Kovner, you've heard your colleague saying that they are prepared to support, but perhaps looking at previous experiences, there are potential problems with this one. What is your response?
I don't see how Mr. Boyinedu is presuming to be that there will be a problem. I don't anticipate any problem. The loan facility that he is talking about, that 1.8 billion, that Eastern Corridor project, it was brought and withdrawn from Parliament. It's a normal thing that Parliament does. Anytime there is a problem, a little problem, it's referred to a committee and at times it's withdrawn. So I don't see anything wrong with what was done. It has been the practice of Parliament everywhere.
Yes, you are still online.
This is my point of contention, because if he is admitting, by his own admission, the $1.8 billion which was brought to Parliament has been withdrawn. It's now a fiasco.
It's not a
fiasco. So, where is the guarantee that
it is not a fiasco?
Will come to Parliament and not just throw dust into our eyes, and then next day...
It is not a fiasco.
Yeah. Mr. Boyanedu, you are posing a question. Yes, Mr. Kovna, if you can clear that one, because you are responding quickly.
It is never a fiasco. There was a technical thing.
Yeah.
And it is clear.
Can you explain what is technical about it?
You know, it's not an easy thing to prepare a loan facility. So if it's sent to a committee and a committee referred to the House about the technicalities, it has to be sent back to the ministry. So that's how it came about.
So, in this case, you believe that this particular loan will go through and you will have maximum benefit as a region?
Yes.
Going from here and looking at the stance of your colleague, they are not against the loan facility. That is, if it is coming. How are you going to work together to ensure that, assuming it is even approved, it gets to work to benefit Western region?
They are quick. Mr. Edu is quick to criticize that. He fears that this thing will not go through. It is not true. It is going to go through because it's taking time to work on it. And as at Monday, the committee was still working on the project, on the facility. Now that it has been laid in Parliament, I believe things will go well tomorrow, from tomorrow and Friday. I don't.
Mr. Obinche.
Yes, Mr. Edu.
You see, my honourable friend, you know, Kobina, I think. They are suffering from this extreme optimism, because they were very optimistic about the STX. What didn't happen in this country? We are all, you know, witnesses. They were so optimistic that the facility was coming just maybe the next day. Beth was going to be given to the facility just the next day. And look at the many months that have passed, and they are still optimistic that STX money will come. You see?
Hello?
So now again, he's optimistic that this 3 billion will come. Me, that is my only fear. If the money is a genuine money, that will come. And whatever be the case, that it will come. I'm going to support it.
Okay. Mr. Boyanedu.
Hello.
We want to thank you very much for your time.
Hello.
This evening. Mr. Boyanedu is MPP for Amenfi in the Western region. Yes, Mr. Kovna, we are picking your comment before we wrap up with you.
Okay. Mr. Boyanedu, this is not the first time that Ghana's parliament has failed to utilize a loan that has been approved by parliament. Remember during the MPP time, there was a loan facility which was approved, and later it turned to be, the source of the loan was turned to be a saloon, a hairdressing saloon in Accra, in Ghana. The loan never came. The SES was a supplier credit agreement, and a business credit supplier agreement between SES Engineering and Construction Ghana Limited and Ghana Korea Joint Venture Company. So there are differences. If you talk about SES, tomorrow I think Monday the Minister for Waste and Housing come out with a definite policy on it.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with it. Only there's a hitch in the agreement between the two companies, the partners.
Okay.
So government has nothing to do with it at all.
Okay.
Yeah, so tomorrow, as from Monday, you hear from the minister coming out with a statement on the whole thing to clear air.
We'll be looking into that space and providing the relevant information to the listener out there.
We don't have to presume that this one will not go through.
Mr. Harold Kovner.
Presume that this will not go through, then that means there's a hidden agenda from the NDP.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harold Kovner, for joining us on the show tonight. That is the NDC MP for Seshi Akontombra. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, we are taking a quick break. When we come back, development issues and urban sprawl, all the challenges, waste management, perhaps we can even talk about gas and all. We are taking it up with the AMB and expanding it to cover the country. We'll be back. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, reaching you live on Ubuntu 96.5 FM and Radio Central, Cape Coast. For a greater part of this year, the Accra Metropolitan Assembly has been busy working to create conditions that befit the status of a millennium city. Managing waste and clearing the streets of hawkers have been seen as part of the steps in attaining the desired status. However, the AME acknowledged that creating and maintaining a Millennium City is a challenging endeavor, not only because of resources, but the attitude of the people. With an increasing influx of people into the metropolis, how is the AME handling its responsibilities? Behind the News is delving into how the AME is meeting the challenge and working on the attitude of people. And we are glad to have joining us in the studio to explore the issues the public relations officer of the Metropolitan Assembly, Numu Blafo. Numu, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sometimes I want to ask that blunt question. When we see some of the challenges with the city or the metropolis, can we ask, is the AME sometimes overwhelmed?
Let me say good evening to your listeners and then your crew. And to begin with, actually, the challenges the AME faces is really overwhelming. But you see, in these challenges, that is where the opportunities are. Therefore, we're taking it as the AME itself is a solution looking for problems to solve. So we don't allow the challenges to override our vision, our focus to make what we are really resolved to do. And as you said, you can imagine a city that has not been even anticipated to have 3 million people residing in it. All of a sudden, we are having over 4.5 million people residing in the metropolis, with another 1 million people coming in daily. And you see, when we say they come in, they really leave some leftovers, because it's like you have a sieve, you want to see something. As you are sieving it, some will remain in the sieve. So this 1 million people that come in daily, actually, they are leftovers. So we are faced with always trying to solve problems that we haven't even anticipated. Therefore, with experience, the AMA has realized that really we need to even look further than we're seeing things.
Yeah.
You talked about the Millennium City. Yes, Accra has been declared a Millennium City since 2010. And it's a resolution of the Assembly to make sure that Accra will not be competing with, I won't say our sister assemblies, I'm not looking down at them, but we're projecting Ghana. Therefore, Accra is competing with cities like Johannesburg, Cairo, any major city in the world. London, mention them. That these are the kind of cities Accra is competing with.
Yeah. Therefore, let me just break in quickly so that you clear this for those who do not understand. What do we mean when we say a Millennium City?
When we say a Millennium City, actually, we are in a new millennium. Therefore, there is this Millennium City initiative from the Earth Institute of Columbia University in the USA.
Mm-hmm.
And even before the Millennium City, we have Millennium Villages initiative, where a city that is chosen is made sure that everything that makes up a city, everything that makes the people within that jurisdiction of that area feel comfortable in way of transportation, electricity or energy, water and sanitation, everything that at least makes the people within that catchment area comfortable, so that if you wake up in the morning and you want to iron your clothes, you know electricity is available. You wake up and you want to wash your clothes, water is available. You wake up and you don't find soap, as we're saying everywhere, you know, all these things are not there. A city that is free of diseases, a city, we can't say people won't be sick.
Mm-hmm.
People will be sick. But then, even if you are sick, there are the facilities for you to assess, so that at least you are sure. Even, you see, sometimes when you have the hope that if I go to this place, I'll get this. Even your getting there has already solved about 70% of the problem.
But you've quickly mentioned something that should be available in a Millennium City.
Yeah.
Water, electricity. And sometimes the AMA will tell you directly, they are not handling this. So where there are challenges, you can't hold them responsible.
And I said something in the beginning that in these challenges, there lies opportunities.
Yeah.
Therefore, as we're speaking now, AMA has taken some strides to make sure that within the shortest possible time, it will be generating its own energy to supply to the metropolis and even the excess given to the national grid.
We'll come to concentrate on that particular one, please. Note, but for some time, you've been waging a war on hawking in some parts of the city, because you tell us it is not everywhere you banned hawking.
Yeah.
Can you explain this and how you are faring?
Well, sometimes people say we haven't even, or we've created problems by coming up with this street hawking bylaw, which we began the implementation on 1st April this year. But you see, the problem is we have a people, actually everybody is trying to make ends meet. We at the AMA are not there to put people out of job. We are rather there to support people to make their living, to improve their living standards, to make sure that at least whatever you're doing, you do it decently and comfortably without you regretting at any time that you've been in Accra. Therefore, in the past, this hawkers market was constructed. It's now becoming a white elephant. But then we are not throwing up our arms in frustration that, yes, attitude, the changing of attitude is not an event, it's a process. Therefore, gradually, people will come to understand why we say they should not be on the street. One, they create a lot of nuisance for motorists, pedestrians, especially those who sell on the pavements and then the other walkways. You see, people are saying that when we drive them away from there, we are denying them or we are even infringing on their rights. But the other way round, they have rather infringed on the rights of the pedestrians movement. Because if the pavement was created for the pedestrian to have his free way of movement without hindering or hindrance from vehicles and all that, then you go and sit on that pavement saying you are selling, then you are infringing on the rights of movement of the pedestrian, because you don't want him or her to move freely. When you go and stand in the middle of the road and say you are hawking, you are not hawking. You are trading. And trading is done in the market. Hawking, by definition, you carry your load and you move around. You don't stay at one place. And apart from that, you see, when they bring out these things they sell from the shops and all that, you know they are packaged. When they remove their packs, they leave them on the street. The AMA has to spend about 85% of its IGF, that is the internally generated fund, to clear this refuse. Therefore, how much will be left for developmental projects? And since the coming of the NDC, led by the good old Professor Tamils and our Mayor, Honorable Alfredo Kuvanapo, we'll be able to abolish the school shift system within the metropolis. And to do that, we need money. We are now constructing permanent structures. We constructed temporary structures to house the people who will be coming in the afternoon or in the morning. Therefore, even in that case, the children were having less time of teaching and learning hours within the classrooms. Now, everybody is having at least 7 to 8 hours teaching and learning time. We need money to do all these things. Places where we couldn't construct the temporary structures, what we did was that we had to rent premises for these people to go to schools in. We need money. So if we use our money to clear refuse, it's like collecting the taxes from the people and then dumping it in the drain. At the end of the day, work done is zero.
You spoke so much about education when you were starting that campaign. Do the people now understand, because we see them getting back gradually?
Yes. You see, they have adopted a kind of strategy in the sense that when we move them from one place, they find other areas to operate. That is also stretching our personnel. But we also making gains in the sense that at least for now, you come to an area like the National Theatre, the place is free. You get to Kalkudi, the place is free. Flagstaff House, so many places. Yet they found areas also to engage in these activities. All we will need to do is to employ more personnel to deploy them to all these areas to make sure.
What about directly engaging them so that in a forum you share your concerns, they bring up theirs, and then they see the relevance of whatever you are pushing?
You see, before the implementation of this street talking bylaw, what we did was that we went, you know, AMA is subdivided into 11 submetros. We went to all these submetros, did a lot of education with them, stakeholders meetings with them. We were in the media everywhere to make sure that at least people understand. But you see, it got to a point where we weren't having or getting the kind of support we need from the media. Because one, the media is there to inform, to educate and entertain. But then it turned out that some of them have also made up their mind to make sure that whatever we do, they find ways of getting loopholes or even, you see, in the implementation of every law, there are excesses because every human has his tolerance level that we should not overlook. Therefore, people, as humans, may err one time or the other. Therefore, we shouldn't be only looking at where we erred, but we should also be looking at where we made strides, where we made things go right, so that at least when we highlight on those things, people will know, or others will also know that, yes, this is what is happening. But then people abandoned the good things that we are doing, the education that they should be engaged in, and then started the kind of, how do we call it, a systematic tarnishing of the image of the AMA. All the good things that we've done, people were pushing those things under the carpet and rather getting the little mistakes that people do, because we are humans and nobody will be perfectly right 100%.
Nemo, you've spoken about something right from the beginning of this chat with you, the fact that you plan for a fewer number and you have an influx of a lot more. I'll come to you to relate to your planning. We want to go quickly to the line. Dr. Osu Berima is in the Department of Geography and Resource Development, the Geographical Information Systems and Remote Sensing Unit. Dr. Osu Berima, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you.
Presently, listening to Nemo Blafo here with me in the studio, there is an urban challenge, and when it is the capital, it is immense. How can land use be made more effective, taking care of all these numbers?
Well, thank you, Kingsley. Land use planning has been a challenge everywhere. The only good news in other places is that they've been able to gather the data using geographic information system. And as you might know, the essence of planning is to control the outcomes of our actions today in the future, which means that you plan to control what will happen in future. So you have the data, and then you plan with the data. Perhaps in our part of the world, the lack of data or accurate data, or for that matter, databases for people to assess it, has been the cardinal failure, and for that reason, affecting our planning system in terms of land use. One would expect that you might have, let's say, land parcels or building footprints, and you have a database of the street system, and for that matter, you can put all of them together in geographic information system database. So you can actually look at what if scenario. For instance, we have the population of Accra. Let's say in a hypothetical case, we have a population of, say, 5 million in Accra. And if you have the database and everything, you can look at what if the population increased by 10%? What if the population increased by 20%? What will happen? So you can simulate the alternatives. And then you can make remedial action. So in a sense, you can have different plans or different scenarios. And then based on...
Hello? Hello, Dr. Osu Berima. I think we had a challenge with Dr. Osu Berima developing a point. But that is bringing us to an important issue. Looking at the population and the influx, perhaps he was getting to a point where we say, perhaps plan for more so that when there is less, there won't be a problem. Is the AMA taking into
consideration? That is where this, our issue of the Millennium City, which is in line with our investment forum that we launched just this month, I think last 2 weeks. Yes, and we're going to have an investment forum next month at the Accra International Conference Center, where we're looking at local content as to investors within our own setting, who understand the kind of situation we are in, they will make their contribution so that at least all the developmental projects that the ANA has earmarked, we get these people on board. That is the, like the public-private partnership to make sure that we provide all the necessary infrastructure that we need to accommodate everybody. Then in October, we're going to New York to hold another investment forum there. That is the Accra Investment Forum, to also get the foreign partners on board to develop Accra to the status or to the level that we won't be sitting down and then saying, we did not plan for this, we did not plan for that, and we are overtaken by circumstances.
Yeah, I guess we have Dr. Usubema back online. Hello, Doc.
Yes.
Yes, so sorry we lost you, but you were developing a hypothetical situation, and just when we lost you on the line, if you can please complete that one for us.
Yes, what I was saying is that, assuming we have all our databases together, and using a hypothetical case, say we have a population of Accra being 5 million. So with geographic information system, we can build what is called what if scenario by saying, what if population of Accra increased by 10%? What if it increases by 20%? What will be the effect on transportation? What will be the effect on hawking and all these situations? So in that case, we'll be able to actually build alternatives and weigh the alternatives so we know what is likely to happen if the unexpected happens. And that's why most people think of geographic information system as decision support, you know, because in any decision that you take, it gives you the actual data to play with, and then you can build in the unexpected and the expected. So you'll be able to deal with the situation as it comes.
When you talk about the geographical information systems, how exactly can metropolitan authorities know about it and also be able to use it effectively?
For the metropolitan authorities, I actually say not less than about 80% of their daily decisions are actually things that demands a geographic information system. And that is why in countries like U.S., every city has a geographic information system department that deals with every aspect of the city. When you look at the city of Accra, what we need to do right now is to develop the actual, what is called the spatial, geospatial infrastructure. Set up a big database, capture all the spatial data, and then start putting all the attribute data into it. So we can actually make good decisions based on actual numbers or actual data, because if you plan without data, it becomes very difficult. You either underestimate or overestimate.
And it becomes a big problem. Dr. Usubema, just hold on quickly. Let me pick a quick comment from Numo. Numo, you are having some of the planning experts, and this time using projections, the GIS as it's talking about. Are you incorporating some of these ones into the investment forum so that if they get the necessary assistance, it also comes to you to assist the city in the long run?
Yeah, well, you see, we have a project running. That is the Urban Management Land Information System, which uses the geography information system, as Doctor has mentioned. And in this system, what we're doing is that we pick up an area, and then we block the, how do I make, we block, we put the houses in blocks.
Yeah.
Therefore, we are coming up with the numbering of those houses, and every block has its unique number, to the extent that whenever you go into that system and you are able to click in a number, you can get every information that you need about that block, the land use, whether they are residential, commercial, industrial, whatever the land is being used for, you will get it from that database we build. And it is an ongoing project that we began the first phase or the pilot project in the Ayawaso submetros. That is the three Ayawaso submetros. So I believe and I support Dr. this thing that, yes, we need these systems to function, to make the city run as it should.
Dr. Osebrema, coming back to you, maybe we take this one quickly because we are getting to it soon. Waste management, is that system also going to assist waste management?
Yeah, geographic information system is also used for waste management system. Actually, I know a lot of people have been talking about it, and I, as I'm speaking right now, I have three students who want to use geographic information system to think of the optimal location where we can do all the dampings and all the other things in order to avoid all the other things. But not only that, for instance, we have all these contractors that do the waste lifting and then dumping all of them. Geographic information system can be used in terms of tracking who is doing this, who is not doing this. We can also use in terms of routing as to what will be the shortest distance to run from place to place. We can also use it to educate the general populace in terms of the location of dustbin, how we should convey it from where to where and all that. So in the entire system, but as I said earlier, geographic information system deals with data. You really need to collect the geographic data and then be able to produce map and also do analysis, and as a result we can produce a useful information that will facilitate all these things. So right now I don't know, but I know three of my master's students want to actually help AMA develop optimal system for locating and also kind of conveying or routing all the tracks that convey the waste in the city.
Okay. Dr. Osebrema, I want to thank you for now. Later when we are exploring the others in relation to it, we'll try to get back to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Osebrema is with the Department of Geography and Resource Development, GIS, and Remote Sensing Unit of the University of Ghana. I'm Legon, using technology to assist the development process. But we spoke about waste management. Do we have a dumping site after we've collected everything before we're complaining about it?
Yeah, we had the problem during the rainy season because the roads leading to the dam sites weren't all that good. And most of the trucks get there and then they get stuck and all that. But those roads have been fixed. But we are now looking at using the waste or using waste to generate energy.
Mm-hmm.
That is what the AMA is looking at.
The opportunity you spoke about.
Yes, because I said in every challenge there is an opportunity. So that is the places we are exploring now. Now, fortunately for us, to Zoom Lion is also constructing a composite plant at Ajenkotoku, which will be ready very soon. And we wouldn't be looking for dump sites. TMA is also doing some. And you see, AMA generates over 2,000 cubic tons of refuse daily. We are only able to collect 1,800 cubic tons.
What happens to the rest?
Thank you. That's a big question. What happens to the rest? They are the those that are not declared. And they end up in our drains and waterways and all those things.
But sometimes the complaint is that it is not just a matter of getting to the dumping site too, but even the assigned contractors do not get to their households, even though they are registered.
Yes. Some of them, what happens is that, you see, we have this, how do we call it, these Kayabola people. You understand? They know the nooks and crannies in the metropolis. And where they go, most of our waste management contractors haven't even gotten to those areas. They go and collect these refuse. The token they need to pay at the central container point, they will want to avoid it. Then this refuse ends up in unconventional areas. And that is why we're also advising our residents not to give their refuse to these people. They need to prompt. You see, if you are in an area, let's look at this way. You are a law-abiding citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You pay your taxes. Now, you pay your tax for a particular purpose. You are not getting returns. What do you have to do? You need to stand up and demand your rights. But people, I don't know whether they don't know that they need to demand those things. But they just look at the alternative and they find solace in those things. But then, I always say that so far as...
about planning and being able to adequately take care of people in our urban settings. For us, the big question is, have we lost the plot?
Please go again. I didn't get
you. We are asking whether the challenge is too overwhelming for us now.
Okay. Thank you very much. And greetings to you. Yes, there is a challenge. And it appears sometimes quite overwhelming. But we haven't lost the battle yet. Our city is still not too big. For example, as far back as 1984, Cairo was 10 million, and Johannesburg is more than close to 10 million. So there are many African cities that are in the 10 million, but Accra is still around 3, 4 million. So we, and Kumasi is less. So we haven't lost the battle yet. If we put ourselves together in terms of training of our development, city management skills or experts, if we put ourselves together in terms of our logistics, if we go ahead with training for our local government system and we strengthen it through capacity building, if we are able to get our legal framework for planning and for land management and administration, I'm sure we can manage our cities and make them functional and quite workable and beautiful for our nation.
So far, what has been missing in all these things you've mentioned?
What is missing?
Yes.
A few things. One thing, the first on the list is that, I would say, is that we are working with a planning legislation which is almost 50 years old, the so-called CAP 84. This plan was bequeathed to us by the British when they were leaving us in 1957. And this plan was based on the British culture and the British traditions and the British educational system and lifestyle. And we have used it, and even when they introduced the first time in 1951, they changed it about 3 or 4 times before they left in 1967. And we have maintained this old law, British law, up to today. How can that work for a young developing country like ours? It's a thing. It's one major problem. We must change our planning law, our planning framework, so that we come up with new and appropriate legislation that would work for a developing country with cities that are growing in terms of population, in terms of migration, and with poverty levels being a bit high. That is one thing. Then also, we need to train our development, urban management experts. Here, I'm not only talking about planning, even though planners are key, but we need also people to manage our land. That is land administrators and land economists. We need people in the local government system who would also, from the AMA and the KMA, are experts and can handle revenue and other things. We don't have the right manpower. For example, if you are to, we have many, almost about 40% of our district capitals don't even have one human settlement planner, or what we call a physical planner. So this, it is also a major problem. If you don't have the people who have been trained to manage our towns and our cities, then we can have problem. AMA in Accra may not be able to boast of about 10 qualified planners working now for the Accra city. And even from 10, 20 years back, there were more than that, and the city was smaller. now that the city is bigger, I doubt whether we can have 10 qualified planners working for Accra City.
So you push for that one?
I'm saying that now that about 20 years ago, when the city was smaller in terms of population and size, they had over 20 to about almost 25 or more planners working for Accra City. Now that the city is bigger, about 4 million people and almost 3-4 times the size, I don't think they have 10 qualified planners who are working for Accra. So the problem is so overwhelming for them that they cannot actually manage the growth of Accra and move ahead of development. So always we are reacting to development. Development goes ahead of planning instead of planning going ahead of development.
Okay.
And so the developers create a mess, and the planners come in to clean it up. Mm-hmm. And that is not the way to develop cities that are growing so fast. The third thing is what is missing. The third thing is logistics. We are still, in terms of monitoring and inspection of development, so that you can identify problems and solve them. We are still using the old traditional methods of going to the site inspection, and moving with vehicles and that kind of thing. It's not possible. You need remote sensing. You need geographical information systems so that immediately development, illegal development, unauthorized development comes up. Within a matter of day or two, it's identified, and then it is corrected.
Okay.
We don't have this thing. So in terms of logistics, we are not very current, so that the cities are growing faster than our human and logistical capacity
can cater for,
actually cope with.
Professor Samafrani, it's a development dialogue that will continue some other time. But for now, I want to thank you very much for sharing all these things with us on Behind the News.
Most welcome.
Professor Samafrani is the provost of the College of Arts and Sciences and also a lecturer, Department of Planning, KNUST. Kumasi, we have some of your tests here before we come back to Numo Blafo. Raman Tamale, Lone Seer, why? Kingsley, I think Ghana deserves better. And this one is saying, Brackensley, when will the NDC government pay the cocoa farmers bonus? I'm asking this because we farmers have no money to buy insecticide to spray on cocoa. At the same time, the road to my village is also not in good shape. Please, NDC government, do something about it before 2012. I'm Mayor Blankson, Monson Quantas. The minority should support the majority to carry out the STS project so that we can get massive development in the country, as this dollar from WAR. And the government has done well by donating towards the suffering people of Somalia. God have mercy on them, from Andrew Manga Boku. And NPP should not be seen opposing every development project, Yamoha WAR. Abariga Awudu says the minority should put Ghana's interests first before any political argument. And Emmanuel Phobia, UDS WAR, says students cannot afford their school fees. There is gas shortage, bad roads, and prices of food going up. Instead of solving these problems, the government is looking elsewhere. Ghanaians are watching. And Joseph Sobiba, hi Kingsley. In fact, I advise fellow Ghanaians never to make the mistake of voting the NPP back to power, or else we'll regret a regrettable regret come 2013. And Kwame Puku, why is the NDC government trying to stampede parliament to approve of a loan without due diligence when the ghost of SDS is yet to be exorcised? And Augustine from Yigi is asking, when will WAEC release the withdrawal results of the 81 schools? And if the minority MPs from the West fail to back the $3 billion loan, then Westerners must advise themselves in 2012. Kojoikins from Cape Coast. Behind the News, still here and live on Garden City Radio. We want to go back to the line before we get to Numo to tell us about their investment plans and the way forward for the AME. But before then, we have Edward Nba, a waste management expert, on the line to add up to the other concerns already expressed by worthy resource persons. You are welcome once again to the show. Hello, Nzemba.
Yes.
So we are asking that big question. Numo Blafo with us in the studio is talking about the fact that now waste is going to be used as a resource. For you, how best should that be done to make the cities clean?
Thank you very much, and good evening to your listeners. Let me just be quick and give you a very typical example. Several years ago, you could find a number of metals from accident vehicles and all kinds of metals along our roads. And today, they are virtually missing. people are going everywhere to pick metal. The simple reason is that some value has been added to that metal. And therefore, if I go picking that metal, you have created employment for me. I have a market to sell it. People are even exporting waste today. So once you put value on the item, you make it a resource rather than a liability to society.
Are we letting people appreciate that this is a resource so that they start treating it dearly?
Yes, but before you make it a resource, you must let people understand that if I do even store separation of waste, if I separate my waste into the various waste fractions in my house, in my commercial entity, in my factory, I have a ready source where I can exchange it for money. I can sell it out. But if I'm going to separate paper and only to find it back in the waste stream at a dump site or a landfill, I think that there will be no incentive or motivation for source separation of waste.
So you are talking about separation. Mr. Redenbaugh, I want to thank you very much for that very important point. But we are returning to the studio. Numu Blafo, we don't have so much time, but you've heard different concerns, but all are also moving in one direction, development for the urban areas. AMA is the capital. What is the way forward from here, looking at the challenge?
Fine. As the AMA was declared a millennium city, we had different experts in different fields coming to the AMA to do surveys as to how to develop the AMA or the metropolis to a first-class city. We've had planners who have come in, they've done their feasibility studies, they've made presentations as to our the redevelopment of our slums, like the urban slum upgrading. We've chosen areas like Nema, the Gamashi community, some parts of Choko, and I think Mamubi, where these projects have been taken, the people have been there, they studied the land usage and all that, and they've come up with their proposals. So we have all these things on our table, which we are going to present at the investment forum to seek partners who will come and invest in building or even in providing housing.
When is the investment forum again?
That will be in October, but the CRA one will be on 28th of September. 26th September this year.
Limo, you know, talking about a city that is growing, you cannot finish talking about everything all at once.
It's
but we all really appreciate you joining us in the studio tonight to clear some of the concerns for us.
Thank you very much.
Limo Blafo is the public relations officer of the Accra Metropolitan Assembly. Before we go, some of your tests. Afna Richard in Techiman says the minority should support the loan if only the terms are going to help the country's development. Why has the government failed to pay last year's salaries of newly trained teachers, Israel Kankwasa BE? And Victor from Bamboy, it would defy logic if some MPs, for the sake of party loyalty, would refuse to support a good cause by their opponents. And the minority MPP has no case. They should give us a break. AU Farouk sent that one. And Derek Charles in Panyan Laura says, depending on loans for the development of this country, it's not good. And that is where we wrap it all up for today. On behalf of Akwesi Akwa on the controls for today, and also Christopher Siedu, Edmond Tete, and Bright Agama production team, my name is Kinsley of Inchre.